welcome to episode 2 of Gas Tour, the FC Tokyo podcast by the fans for the fans. I'm Ben from On the Gas, and here again is Dan from Ice Terror Tokyo. Evening, Dan.
Good evening, Ben, and thank you to all of our listeners. Good to be here.
Indeed, yeah, we had a really good response to the first episode, so thanks to everybody who downloaded or listened. Very positive reaction, Dan.
Yes, very. A lot of Western listeners and a surprising number of Japanese listeners, too. So hopefully you'll continue to stick with us as we expand into the FC Tokyo universe and spread the word.
Indeed. So just the two of us here tonight. Graham, unfortunately, couldn't make it. No truth to the rumor that he's sorting out his diamond-encrusted souvenir collection, but we hope to have Graham back on this weekend after the first game of the season.
See, I heard that he was actually auditioning for midfielder because we are again a little thin on the ground.
Indeed, indeed. So quite a bit's happened since the first episode, which we recorded early February. Since that date, FC Tokyo have played 6 more training matches, and yesterday's pre-season friendly against Thespa Kusatsu away in Gunma. So Dan, let's jump straight in, talk about yesterday's game. A 1-1 draw. What has the reaction been?
Reaction by both fans and press alike is that this was the ideal J2 simulation for FC Tokyo at Shota Shoyu Stadium, or Soysa Stadium, basically. You have a very bad pitch. The players, as you told me earlier, Ben, had to practice off the pitch and do their warm-ups off the field.
That's right, yeah.
So you have the pitch issues, you have refereeing that isn't quite up to J1 standards, not that J1 standards are very high to begin with, and you have a 1-1 draw in which Kusatsu basically took the lead off of some bad post play by FC Tokyo in the 36th minute of the first half, and 10 minutes later, our boy Sota Hirayama headed in a picture-perfect cross by Takumi Abe, who's in his second year? Third year?
Maybe his first year with the full squad. I'm not sure, actually. I don't think he's featured before, but
He didn't really get any playing time last season, but he's done really well in training camp, and he's likely going to be in the starting lineup on Saturday, and we'll get to that in a bit.
Speaking about the starting lineup, just run us through the 11 that started the game for FC Tokyo yesterday.
Well, in goal, we have Hitoshi Shiota. In the back line, we've got Abe, Konno, Morishige, and Tokunaga. At midfield, we've got Tatsuya Yazawa, Kanyu, Roberto, and Otake. And then up front, we have our Tatsuya
Ooh,
Suzuki.
Goodness me.
And Sota Hirayama. And coming off the bench were 4 players. You had Kenta Mukuhara, who didn't really get much time. Hokuto Nakamura, who played at midfield. Sultan Tanabe, who also played in midfield and didn't really have that much time. And Roberto
Cesar,
the salad, or Julius, if you're feeling feisty.
Indeed.
And he got about 35 minutes or so, and didn't really have such a big game, which stands in stark contrast to how he's performed for most of the offseason. Well, we're not sure if that's a fitness issue, but a lot of different names from where we were a month ago, and if you'd like to talk more about the injury situation.
Indeed. Well, yeah, the club hasn't been especially forthcoming when it comes to releasing injury news, but we do know that Shuichi Gonda, our number one goalkeeper, has a dislocated finger and is in the middle of 3 weeks out. He's about 1 week into that at the moment, I think, but he's definitely ruled out of the first game. And some of the other players that haven't featured that much or at all in the other training games. The casual man, Yohei Kajiyama, he hasn't featured since actually the game that we featured in the last podcast, Shimizu. And Naohiro Ishikawa has again had a disjointed preseason. He hasn't played at all since a preseason game against Toyama, which was on the 12th of February. He's obviously too busy going to autograph signing events, so stick to that now, you'll be all right. Pedro Jr., one of our new Brazilians, has been out for a little while. Again, no news at all about that. And one of the experienced J-League strikers that we signed in the off-season, Daiki Takamatsu, hasn't featured at all in the preseason.
Actually, now that I'm remembering, I think he actually had an Achilles injury. No, he had some sort of major injury near the end of last season.
Okay,
so that's
right.
Why I don't think that we were expecting him to make such a quick return. But he should get into the swing of things possibly as early as later in March or April, I believe.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, so quite a few injury concerns to important players, but as we discussed in the first episode, our squad is massive, and we should have the bodies to cover. One name in particular that stood out for me in the preseason, Dan, has been Yazawa. We talked about him as being more of a fringe player in the first episode, but he seems to be getting a lot of chances to impress in the preseason, and more or less, he seems to be doing the job.
I agree. I think that he, whether or not he can be a 90-minute player is yet to be seen, but he certainly joins Hanyu in kind of the Roswell combo. He's a bit of a weird guy, but he's shown adequate skill so far in his chances. We've got the latest issue of El Galato here, and they give him a fairly positive rating, but in general, both El Galato and fan reaction wants him to touch the ball more. And I think he'll get that opportunity this Saturday, either as a starter or possibly as a sub.
Yeah, well, I think in the preseason, it looks to me that, again, we'll talk about the team we expect Tokyo to put out in the first game of the season a little bit later, but it looks to me like Yazawa's won himself a starting berth, either on the left or the right of midfield, for the first game. So it'll be very interesting, I think, for all of us to see him in a red and blue shirt in a competitive game to see how he gets on. All right, so any more you wanted to discuss about the injuries, Dan?
No, I'm a bit disappointed that we're once again going into the season not quite at 100%, but perhaps you could speak more as to whether or not that's normal. Players are only human. They may be very fit, conditioned humans, but they're still human. I think that most of our injuries are a bit kind of that nagging. For example, in the American National Football League, they'd be questionable.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Brett Favre is always questionable.
Right,
he still starts every game,
yeah,
or started every game. And I think most of the injuries are like that. So at least we didn't really have anything totally disastrous like Yonemoto's injury last season. And Yonemoto, we didn't really mention him because he didn't actually play in this last game.
Well, that's right. He's been on the fringes of starting all of the preseason games, basically, because, as we mentioned again in the first show, he's suspended for Saturday. So I think it's good that Roberto's had a lot of time in the first team in these warm-up games. And again, I've got to be honest, I haven't read either positive or negative reviews about how he's gone. But we know he's an experienced J2 holding midfielder, so, you know, he does a lot of the dirty work. We wouldn't expect him to be grabbing the headlines, so I guess no news is good news as far as Roberto is concerned.
I've read some news about Roberto, and most of the reaction I've read is guardedly positive. I think he has exceeded initial expectations. I don't think anyone expected him to start on Saturday, but it looks like that's what we're going to get. So I hope he continues to exceed expectations and do well.
Well, that's it. I mean, he kind of sits there in the squad as the third central midfielder after Casual and Yone. So with Yone suspended, he'll obviously get his chance on Saturday. And yeah, it'll be good to see him step out in the number 16 shirt. Okay, so wrapping up the preseason, I guess for me, there's just a slight disappointment that it seems like it's Ricardinho all over again. Roberto Cesar, the salad himself, it doesn't look like he'll be starting the first game. That's my impression anyway. And, you know, we went through this last season with Ricardinho. We were all excited to see him, and, of course, he didn't even get on the pitch the first game against Yokohama. But hopefully the club is being a little bit cautious with him and they'll build him up to full fitness. He does look a little bit chunky. Sorry, I hope you're not listening to this salad. But I'm sure as soon as he gets into top shape, he'll be starting alongside Hirayama because he has scored quite a few goals in the warm-up games. So we look forward to seeing the salad on the pitch. Quick smart. All right, well, that's just about it for part one, wrapping up the preseason. When we come back with part two, a little bit of a special feature on the man we kind of forgot to talk about that much in episode one, Inter Milan's new left-back, Yuto Nagatomo. Okay, welcome back to part two, and in this section we're going to talk about our former number five, our dynamic little fullback, Yuto Nagatomo. You know that he went abroad after the World Cup, after his impressive performances in the 2010 World Cup. He joined Italian side Cesena on loan, and Dan, the end of last week, they formally wrapped up his full transfer, and you have all the figures for us and the good news.
Indeed. Well, as you may know, Nagatomo is now playing for Inter Milan, but he's still owned by Cesena, officially owned, because Cesena, the transfer went down at the end of last week. Cesena will be paying Tokyo approximately 160 million yen, which translates to about 1.75 million euros, or $2 million, or 3 billion Turkish lira.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you, Google, for that factoid. Some of the money will be going to Nagatomo's old clubs, and when we say old, we don't mean not just Meiji University. Was he of Meiji University?
I think that's
he?
Right, yeah.
But also all the way down to the club team that he played with as a sixth grader in elementary school.
Oh, great.
Now, what's interesting about this transfer, and what I kind of wanted to discuss on here, is that Tokyo is really the first team to get a significant amount of money for an international transfer. In the last year, we had Kagawa, who went off to Dortmund. He went off to Dortmund following the World Cup last year, and he did very well for them. He was player of the first half of the season in Bundesliga.
Well, he was outstanding, yeah, before he got injured in the Asian Cup. Yeah, he scored 8 league goals, I think, in about 15 games.
Yeah, ridiculous stats. But the most ridiculous stat is that Cerezo Osaka, which was his former team, only got about 50 million yen for the transfer, so about 500,000 US, whatever in euros, but not very much for a player of Kagawa's ability. More recently, there's been some international drama and intrigue as Stuttgart picked up Shinji Okazaki, and there was a lot of doubt as to the legitimacy of the transfer. Shimizu petitioned to FIFA claiming that his contract didn't expire until after January 31st. His contract with Stuttgart was announced on January 31st. So that's sort of niggling and arguing. And as a result, I don't think it's been settled yet, has it?
Well, I don't know, but I mean, he's been playing for Stuttgart, so Stuttgart are obviously very confident in their position.
FIFA ruled and gave him a provisional player registration, but I don't think they've made a final decision. But in the end, it does appear as though Shimizu won't get as much, if anything, for Okazaki. And as what this comes from is really the J League's system involving player transfers. As we know, Japan has a very different way of managing players, managing personnel. Multi-year contracts were a rarity until very recently. And the way it used to be, it was that players would get signed yearly contracts every year, and it was assumed that a player would keep getting one-year contracts until he wanted differently. Now you have European teams who are mining Tokyo, mining not just Tokyo, but also the rest of Japan for star players and getting them for a song. And so what you're going to see, especially after the Okazaki debacle, is teams changing player contracts and making it harder for players to be traded or to be sold internationally. And whether or not this will have a positive effect on Japan's role in the World Game is yet to be decided. But what it all adds up to is that, for once, FC Tokyo's front office are the smartest guys in the room. How often do we say that, Ben?
Indeed. Well, so what are you saying, that in the Nagatomo deal, the fee was prearranged, and we were always going to end up getting this amount of money, provided he signed a full transfer with them? Or has the fact that he's now signed on loan with Inter, has that affected the amount of money that we've gotten? Do you know? I mean, I don't know the details.
I don't know the details of the loan with Inter, but I believe that the deal with Cesena was set out from the start. They couldn't do a full transfer back in summer of 2010 because of paperwork issues and all the BS involving player registrations in FIFA, which is why it became a loan. But in sum total, roughly 2 million plus euros, including the loan and the transfer, that was pretty much arranged from the start.
And so have Cerezo and Shimizu just dropped the ball? Or have these players left the clubs without their club's consent? Or are they loans or are they full transfers?
I mean, they're full transfers. Don't get me wrong. It's not that the clubs have dropped the ball so much as Japanese soccer as a whole is slow to pick up the ball. The way that players have been dealt with in Japan was not really suited for the international way of money talks. Up until recently, there just wasn't much of an interest in Japanese players from Europe. And now that there is, you're going to start to see the game change a bit. You're going to start to see more deals like with Nagatomo. Teams may not be getting the 6 million or the rumored, 15 million that Manchester United is offering for Honda.
Mm.
Whether or not that's actually true.
God, I hope to God he doesn't go there, Goretzka.
Yeah, that would be...
That would be brutal for me personally as a Liverpool supporter, but anyway, I digress.
It would be brutal for you personally as a Liverpool supporter, but good for Japanese soccer, as long as the money gets to Japanese clubs. And what you're either going to see is Japanese teams and J-League and Japan as a whole start to get smarter about these transfers and learn how to make more money from European clubs, or you're going to see the opposite effect, where they will revolt and sort of keep Japanese players from transferring, which they can do if they really want to.
But then you might end up having the issue like has happened a couple of times with young baseball prospects who have simply refused to play in Japan and out of high school have signed professional contracts with major league clubs, obviously to start in their farm organizations. But isn't there a case at the moment about a young university player who is thinking of bypassing the J-League and going straight to Europe? And I'm not referring to Ryo Miyaichi here. There's another young guy?
There is. I can't remember his name offhand.
No, me too.
But
yeah.
There is, and
so this is a problem. I mean, we might find that young players just bypass the J League altogether.
I mean, this is the country of lifetime employment and of tenure, and really they need to learn that the Japanese way of looking at employment and interpersonal relationships as it relates to soccer and to sports as a whole no longer applies. It does speak well of Japan and Japanese soccer that the players are so good as a whole that they're being considered like this by European teams, but now Japan has to step up to the plate and revise its outlook and revise its way of writing contracts in a way that will benefit both the clubs and the players.
Okay, but the moral of the story is that FC Tokyo have come out of things smelling like roses, and you mentioned the large transfer fee, and your most recent post on Aishiteru Tokyo today, you talked about how the money is rumored to be already assigned to a new Australian player.
Well, originally, as reported, the money was going to be for locker room improvements or renovations of the training complex. Lately, there have been reports not just rumors, but actually reports, that Jade North, an Australian Aboriginal soccer player, who's gotten some national team caps and was actually in the Asian Cup, has been participating in team practices. Whether they should sign him, which we're really doubtful on, or whether they can sign him are another matter. The team already has the maximum number of, quote, type A contracts, which I believe relates to how much they pay the players. We've got 25 type A contracts, and that's the max. So unless we're going to pay him magic beans and a song, we just can't afford him. Ben, you're obviously Australian.
Yeah, patriotic Australian. And, I mean, the idea of having an Australian play for FC Tokyo, it excites me, it interests me, but at the same time, sorry, Jade, but I think it's completely unnecessary. And you might be better off looking elsewhere if you want to play, especially first-team football, because I can't really see where he'd fit in our setup at the moment. As a specialist central defender, obviously he could play right across the back line, but that's probably the strength of our team, Dan. So I think we've talked already about the fact that seems a slightly unnecessary signing.
It is slightly unnecessary, but we also don't know how the transfer winds are going to blow in June and July.
Well, maybe there have been rumblings from other clubs. Maybe a couple of offers, maybe not on the table yet, but maybe there are some interest from some other clubs, either J1 or J2, for some of our more expensive subs, shall we say.
Could be. We've also got a lot of potentially good younger players, such as Sotan Tanabe, who haven't really been getting much playing time. If you look at our central defenders, you've got Konno, who's a national team player of great repute, and we'd be lying if we didn't admit that there are probably plenty of J1 teams who are looking at picking him up. We've got Morishige, who's had a productive offseason. We weren't so satisfied with his form last year.
That's putting it mildly, but yeah, carry on. You're making a good point, yeah.
But he's learned to not quite be as reckless, hopefully, I pray. And you never know. Obviously, the team wouldn't be inviting him to practice if they didn't see a reason to. You don't just fly a dude over from Australia and give him a uniform for nothing. After all, those uniforms are expensive.
Indeed. So we'll see what happens with Jade North. Be highly unlikely that even if he does sign with us, he'll feature on Saturday. But yeah, could be an extra defender added to the squad in the next week or so.
We should note that the deadline for player registration in J-League is April 1st. So if any injuries should befall one of our center backs, you never know. Until then, though, it's totally premature. Jade has a reputation as a solid but not really outstanding player. Obviously, he's got to be decent if he's getting onto the national team, but maybe.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, a decent player. He doesn't set the world on fire, but that necessarily you don't want that from a defender anyway. So I'm sure if he did come in and he got a chance, he'd do the job. But as it stands at the moment, yeah, we might not need him, but yeah, we'll see how everything shakes out, as Dan said.
Yeah, so that's really all we have to say about Jade North, and I guess we're going to take a short break. And following that break, we're going to talk about the upcoming season opener against Sagan Tosu.
Yep, Saturday, 2 o'clock, Aji Star. We're going to come back with a full preview of that in just a moment. Okay, welcome back to part three, and this is the part I've been looking forward to the most. We're previewing FC Tokyo's first game back in J2. The season starts on Saturday at Aji Star, and we're playing host to Sagan Tosu. Sagan Tosu, who finished ninth in J2 last season. Now, Dan, we've talked already about the FC Tokyo 11 from yesterday's preseason friendly. How many changes to that would you be expecting to see on Saturday?
For the most part, we're not expecting too many significant changes. Up top, the big question is who's going to start next to Hirayama. You think that it's going to be Suzuki again?
Unfortunately, I'd like to make that well known that there's a big unfortunately before that, but yes.
I'd prefer either to see Salad start next to him, or if that's not possible, let's go with something resembling a 4-5-1 or a 4-2-3-1, a bit of a diamond formation. And have Hirayama be the lone man up top and play a bit more at the midfield, because the biggest complaint by supporters and press alike is that Tokyo just hasn't figured out the right combination of players yet. All of our players are performing well individually, but we just haven't found that rhythm. And I think that there's opportunity to play around with the formation a bit and find that rhythm.
Fair enough. So, okay, so we started from the front, so... Yeah, I've got to be honest, I'm expecting Tatsuya to start the first game, as he did the first game of last season when he did nothing, but, you know, that's beside the point. So in midfield, yesterday we saw Roberto and Hanyu playing in the centre. We would expect both of those two to be there with Yonemoto suspended and casual, seemingly lacking fitness, Dan?
Yes, Roberto has done very well in the preseason, and he's earned his spot in the lineup, I think. Hanyu, I stated in the first episode of this podcast, I was disappointed that he's still with the squad. I have nothing against him as a player, but I just feel like his time has passed. He's no longer the 90-minute player that I would like us to have at central midfield. But he'll start. Probably, if he starts, he'll play his usual 60-65 minutes and be substituted.
And then take his shirt off as soon as he's substituted.
Oh, yeah. And odds are that either casual, if he's fit, or Uesato, who's done very well as a super sub in this offseason, will come on for him. At the wings, we're likely going to have Yazawa and Otake, who's been challenging himself to play on the right side.
Yeah,
this offseason.
As we've already mentioned, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how Yazawa gets on. Personally, I'm looking forward to seeing him. It looks at the moment, again, we're speaking on Monday, there's a full 5 days to go before the game, but it doesn't look like either Pedro Jr. or Ishikawa will be fit to start the game. So, yeah, as Dan said, Yazawa and Otake look to be the two... wingers that we'll employ, and they both need to take the chance. I'm looking forward to seeing them play, but they both need to impress, because, well, frankly, when Ishikawa and Pedro Jr. are back to full fitness, they are likely to be the two first choice wingers. So it's up to these two guys to impress right off the bat, to use an American sporting expression. At the back, the team from yesterday, it looks like Takumi Abe has done enough to keep his spot at left back, would you say, Dan?
We should say not keep his spot, but take Hokuto Nakamura's spot.
Well, yeah, keep it as in he's played in the last couple of warm-up games and yesterday's friendly at left back.
He's done very well at left back. He actually set up Hirayama's header for the equalizer with a beautiful cross in yesterday's game, and I look forward to seeing how he's going to do. I was never too impressed with Nakamura's play. He was a solid player. Unfortunately, we can't have someone who was as dynamic on offense as he was on defense as Nagatomo was, but it'd be nice to have people on the back line who can burst forward and deliver a bit of magic once in a while.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, Graham's not here to have a go at me, but I think he thinks I was a little bit too glowing in my praise of Hokuto's performance last year after Nagatomo left. But, well, again, we've talked about, you know, maybe Hokuto's struggling with the injury. Mukuhara, you know, has the chance and should seize the chance, but it looks like Abe has moved ahead of him at the moment. So the other three spots in the back line look set, and hopefully will be set right through at least the first couple of months of the season with Kono and Morishige and Tokunaga at right back. And we mentioned that Gonda is out for at least the first two games, so Hitoshi Shiota will start in goal.
Well, it's interesting that you say the first couple months of the season, because obviously Kono will be missing some time at the end of March due to his national team commitments. I imagine he'll probably miss the Tochigi SC game, as well as more than likely the Kitakyushu game on April 3rd. So if that's the case, who can start? Takahashi, I guess.
Well, possibly,
Nagita.
Maybe, or there's a chance for maybe Tokunaga to slide over to center half, and either Mukuhara or Hokuto to operate at right back. But yeah, Takahashi's an option, as is Nagira. But yeah, you're right, actually. Yeah, we haven't talked about this yet, but that Tochigi home game, the second home game, is shaping up as a bit of a danger game, as we might have a lot of national team or under 22 national team players missing for that game. But that's to come in a later episode.
Wait, is it under 20? Is that an Olympic qualifying period, or is that just the Kirin Challenge Cup?
I'm not sure if it's an Olympic qualifier, but it's a warm up for the Olympic qualifying games.
I'll just double check, because at the end of we should clarify that at the end of March, the Japanese national team plays Montenegro and, I believe, New Zealand.
Yep, that's right.
In the Kirin Challenge Cup, which is basically a friendly series of matches that Kirin Brewing Company hosts every once in a while when they need the money. So we could stand to lose, at the very least, Kono. Gonda is probably doubtful to that if his pinky is...
That actually might work in our... His injury might work in our favour, actually. He might not get picked for that.
But. Well, to be fair, it's not as though Shiota is a total slouch. He hasn't played too regularly since 2008. Mm. But he's still got the potential to be a solid goalkeeper. So, certainly, we talked about FC Tokyo's front office being the smartest guys in the room earlier... And they certainly seem even more so now for having four goalkeepers. Because, let's face it, nobody was expecting Gonda to strain his pinky.
Well, that's right. I mean, yeah, injuries can happen at any time. And as we found out last year with Yonemoto, yeah, serious injuries can have an effect on the course of your season. But, yeah, sorry, again, just to reiterate, that's not the reason we went down, but... Yeah, anyway. Yeah, injuries can happen.
It's not the reason we went down, it's a reason we went down.
It played a factor. It definitely played a factor. There's no doubt about that. Okay, so we've talked a little bit about how we think FC Tokyo will set up on Saturday. So how about the visitors? Both of us would be honest enough to say we don't know a huge amount about Sagan Tosu. They are original J2 members. They joined J2 with us in 1999. They are the only team who started in J2 who have never been promoted to J1. They're the closest they've come, finishing fourth in 2006 and fifth in 2009. But there's an asterisk to that fifth place finish. Last year they slid down to ninth. They won 13 games last season, and interestingly, they won 7 of those away from home, so they don't have too many fears about going on the road, it would seem. Dan, you're planning on going down to Tosu if you can in November?
I believe the Tosu game is October 23rd or 24th, but a beautiful soccer-only stadium down over there in Kyushu. Tosu actually, they had a bit of a giant killing streak going. Last year they took down someone in the Emperor's Cup. I remember 2 years ago they took down a couple J1 teams. I believe they got to the quarterfinals.
All right.
In the 2009 Emperor's Cup. So I expect them to come to this game with a bit of a giant killing mentality. Nobody is going to say that Tokyo is a J2 class team, regardless of whether or not they're in J2. And that makes them an attractive target for teams that basically don't know what they're not capable of, if I can use some incorrect grammar there. So you're going to see a lot of these upstart J2 squads gunning for us, and I think one of our points of concern is that if we're caught flat-footed, it could lead to some draws or even a loss or two.
Indeed, yeah. I mean, I've mentioned in a couple of my posts in On the Gas that we're, without question, we're going to be the big fish in J2 this season, and this will be, again, to use an old football cliche, this will be every other team's cup final when they play FC Tokyo, and I'm sure that Tosa will want to get off to a good start. In my most recent post on the Gas blog, I attempted to rank all of the teams in J2 from first to worst, 1 to 20. And Tosu finished 9th in 2010, but I've had them slipping down to 12th in my preseason ranking, based mainly on the fact that they don't seem to have reinforced their squad to the same degree as some teams who finished even below them. It looks to me, from my limited research, that the two danger men that Tokyo will have to be careful of on Saturday are forward Yohei Toyoda. He scored 30 J2 goals in his professional career, and he was far and away Tosu's top scorer last year with 13 goals in his 34 games. And also a young South Korean, Kim Moon-woo, who scored 4 times and actually had 8 assists. And that was his first season of professional football after signing out of a Korean university. So a little winger, little left-sided player. He's one to watch for the Tokyo fans. And obviously our back line will have to be on their guard against both he and Toyoda. The rest of the squad, I've got to be honest, I don't know that much about. As a point of reference, they don't have any Brazilians in their squad, if I remember correctly, whereas we will have at least one on from the start. Not that that means anything about how the result's going to pan out, but yeah, a lot of these guys seem to be J2 journeymen, and as I said, last year, Tosu finishing 9th, slipping down the table a little bit, and I have them slipping down a little bit further in 2011.
I just wanted to clarify a point. I'm looking up their records in competition, and yes, they did make the quarterfinals of the Emperor's Cup in 2008, not 2009. Last year they got knocked out in the third round, and in 2009 they got knocked out in the fourth round.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a Korean manager, actually.
That's right, actually. Yeah, they're a new manager this season, South Korean gentleman whose name escapes me, but do you have that with you, Dan, or is it in complicated kanji?
Yoon Jung-won. Okay. I'm butchering that, but 37 years old. Wow, that's pretty young. Previously, he was a former player, actually, former midfielder. And he's played pretty much mostly in Japan. He played for Cerezo Osaka for 3 years, and then he played on a couple Korean squad, South Korean club teams from 2003 through 2005, and then in 06 and 07 he played for Sagan Tosu.
Bit of a club legend then.
Yes, actually. His first team was a Korean team, and I'm sorry, I don't know what the South Korean teams were actually called. Mm. He also had 38 caps for the South Korean national team. So, apparently, he's a pretty good player.
There you go. Knows his football, and, as I say, there aren't a huge amount of name players in this Tosu squad, but you never know, this fella might have them gel and play pretty well this season. So I might look a bit stupid, my preseason prediction, but yeah, that remains to be seen. All right, so Sagan Tosu, again, we don't know that much about them, but we're going to welcome them with open arms to Ajisto on Saturday. I wonder how many away fans they'll bring up from Kyushu. It's a bit of a trek, so wouldn't be expecting too many, Dan.
Yeah, it is a bit of a trek, but in March, which starts tomorrow, or I guess today if you're listening to this on March 1st, they're actually completing the connection to the Kyushu Shinkansen, which is going to connect everything from the very tip of Kyushu to Tokyo. So it will be possible to get a direct bullet train from Kyushu to Tokyo, which will be helpful for all the players who, all the supporters, I should say, who want to travel out to Kumamoto or Tosu or Kitakyushu or vice versa. Mm. I'm personally expecting around 20,000 to attend this first match. I know you and Graham like to predict attendance.
Indeed, yeah.
I'm going to come out and say 20,000. FC Tokyo usually gets around 30,000 to home openers. Mm. About that, 29,000, 30,000. Mm. I think that 20,000 would be a success for the club and its mobilization efforts.
Fair enough. So over 20, you think everybody would be very satisfied with?
I think everyone would be very satisfied with. Hopefully more people come out to see Tokyo Ska Paradise Orchestra, who are playing a pregame concert, which I'm looking forward to. Hopefully things will go better than the last time they played a preseason concert. Do you remember that?
Yeah, but I don't remember much going wrong, but...
Yeah, that was, no, I'm talking about the match itself.
Oh.
That was in 2009 against Kawasaki when we lost 2-1.
Okay.
Or 1-2, I should say.
Right.
Or no, it wasn't one. No, it was 2-3. I think we were ahead up. We were up by 2, and then we gave it all away in the last 10-15 minutes of the game.
Which sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah, which is our that is a very Tokyo way to end the game. But I'm expecting good things. I'm expecting a win. Can't tell you by how much, but hopefully by at least a goal or more.
Fair enough. Yeah, I'm not going to call the crowd yet. I won't give Graham that advantage by calling it this early. We'll wait until we're sat down in our regular spot before we do that. But yeah, certainly would hope to get started off our return to J2 with a win. And yeah, the same as Dan, I'm expecting that. I'm expecting the team to come out pretty fired up. And hopefully we'll see an entertaining first game and 3 points for FC Tokyo. All right, well, do we have anything else to add, Dan, before we wrap up?
No, I'd like you to encourage you guys to check out our blogs at aishitarutokyo.com for me and...
Yeah, onthegas.blogspot.com for me.
Yes, it is early in the week and we should both have our official previews up probably on Thursday or Friday is when I'm looking to post. And you should also stay tuned for our next episode, which will probably be uploaded on Sunday or Monday. Is that correct?
I would certainly hope to have it up by Monday at the latest, yes. We're planning on meeting up straight after the first game with instant post-match reaction. There won't be any player interviews or anything posh like that, sorry. But, yeah, we'll be... either grinning from ear to ear or swearing our heads off after the first game on Saturday. So, yeah, look out for that.
Yes, no player interviews, but we would like to reiterate we'd like you to send us our comments, questions, anything you'd like to hear from us, anything you'd like us to discuss. We also, Ben, you extended an invitation to former manager Hiroshi Jofuku, who started on Twitter about a month ago. Hiroshi, if you're out there, we miss you. Please stop by our studio in this lovely izakaya studio. And yeah, so we will hopefully invade your iTunes or other music player again in a few days.
Indeed, yeah, sorry, Mr. Jofuku, I know you're a busy man, but yeah, you're welcome on any time. Okay, well, that'll just about do it for episode 2 of Gas Talk. Thanks for listening, and yeah, we'll be back very soon with reaction to FC Tokyo's season opener. So, once again, Dan, thanks very much.
Thank you, Ben.
You are welcome, sir, and thank you. And we'll speak to you again soon. This has been Gas Talk. Bye for now.